Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Well, we're compiling another UPR community book list today. We want to know what you're reading. What's on your nightstand or device right now? And is there a book that's had a big impact on you? I'm going to list some all-timers for myself, and you're welcome to do that as well. Which books are you looking forward to reading? We'll have a bookseller tell us about some new books that are out. We'd love to hear about books in any category, adult to young adult, children's category. One suggestion or many are welcome. Here's how you get your list to us, upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. We'll get suggestions as well from our UPR friend and avid reader, Elaine Thatcher. And we'll compile all this, put it up on our website to help each other following the news. Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Well, we do this about quarterly. It's a little bit quicker interval this time around. I was just anxious to get back to this. We're compiling another UPR book community book list. So what we do is we put the word out to you, and what I'm hoping is that you'll email me or you could call with what you're reading right now, or maybe it's a list of books, or perhaps one of your or a list of your all-timers. I'm going to give a list of some of my all-timers that have really influenced me. And then we get Elaine Thatcher's list. We get our booksellers list. Today we have with us, we'll have with us later in the hour, David Everett from Back and Beyond Books. And we compile all those books in a list and publish that on our website, upr.org. You'll be able to get to that in a couple of hours. So that's a nice thing. If you're casting about for what to read, well, just go to our book list. And we can all help each other out. They're undoubtedly, every time around, there are books that I hadn't even thought of that a listener will call in with, and then I'm spend many happy hours reading that book. Books in any category, children's books, young adults, adult. Last time Elaine and I confessed my guilty secret, I like romance novels. I confessed it. And so I listed a few of those, some of my favorite romance authors. My wife makes fun of me a little bit.
I think she would.
That. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So anything, anything you'd like to mention, that it's a great thing. Come together. We know our listeners are avid readers. So we have with us, as we always do, Elaine Thatcher, who's a UPR friend and avid reader. Thanks, Elaine, for coming in.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
So as we learned last time, you were retired. You came out of retirement, and you're writing grants for USU Extension.
Correct. Yep.
Very good.
Enjoying that connection with people, yeah, all over the state.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So retirement didn't take, I guess.
It really didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't use my time wisely.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I hear that. I hear that. I mean, I hear people are just busier than ever, or it didn't, it wasn't for them, so they go back to work, right?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, whatever you're doing, we're glad you come in and help us out with this. Let me give the place to respond. Love to get your list, your book that's on your mind right now, what you're reading, what you're looking forward to. For example, Elaine, I look forward to September every year. Not necessarily to read the book, although I enjoyed the books. The next Longmire book is going to be coming out.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just because I enjoy interviewing Craig Johnson so much. He's just a delightful interview.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And so
to
I know every September I get to interview Craig Johnson.
Well, and I've worked up in that country where he lives, up around Buffalo, Wyoming, and it's a unique area, very cowboy.
Yeah.
And I think he loves it up there.
He loves it. He's fun and funny and. And he knows what you need on the radio. He knows he brings the energy.
That's good.
So that's kind of a unique thing as an interviewer. Hey, September is Craig Johnson month. So anyway.
Well, it's also doesn't the Utah Humanities, don't they do their book
they
festival
do. They do.
In
so
September? I think
all kinds of books.
So I haven't heard anything about it yet, but I think it's usually in September.
I believe it
is. Maybe October.
I believe it is. Yeah. So anyway, upraccess@gmail.com. upraccess@gmail.com is where you would send your list. It could be one book or many, whatever you got going on. We'd love to hear about it. We'd love to put it on our book list, and we'll put it out there. We'll help each other with some book ideas. upraccess@gmail.com. upraccess@gmail.com. Or you could call your list in, 800-826-1495. 800-826-1495. We'd really love to get your list. So what's the first on your list, Lynn?
Okay, well, I didn't get a whole lot of reading done this time, because partly because I've been in the garden so much, but I still got some things read, and my absolute all-time favorite for this time is a classic of the 1950s, Cold War, The Ugly American.
Ah, cool. The Ugly American, yes.
By William Lederer and Eugene Burdick. You know, we lived in Pakistan when I was a kid, and we were there in 61 and 62. And I've had this copy on my shelves for years and have never bothered to take it and read it until now. And I noticed that my parents bought that book at a bookstore in Peshawar, Pakistan. They bought it while we were there. And this book created a huge stir among the diplomatic corps of the late 50s, early 60s, because it was really an indictment of the people who would go overseas and just stay in their little cloistered shells. These ambassadors and diplomatic people would really never get out and meet the people. They would only meet the wealthy or, you know, the educated members of the country that they were living in, which gave them a skewed view of that. And that's what this book is criticizing. It's a novel, and it has a whole cast of characters that are really interesting. But we saw that when we lived in Pakistan. We saw people who would not go out and meet the local people. My parents were the opposite. They took us everywhere. We got dysentery a couple of times as a result, you know. But it was a great cultural experience for me as a child. But anyway, so I really, really highly recommend The Ugly American by Lederer and Burdick. It's well worth the read. It takes place before the Americans got so deeply embroiled in Vietnam. It takes place when the French were running the show there and trying to fight the communists. And there's a lot in the book about the communist threat and so forth. And how are we going to stop the communists who are winning the hearts and minds of the people of this fictional country? But it's a Southeast Asian country, kind of like Laos, mm-hmm. you know. Anyway, so very, very interesting book.
Yeah, the Ugly American. And that's interesting that you and your parents would have had that experience, because you're abroad, right?
Yeah, we
you're
were
reading
abroad
this book.
And my parents were the type that would go out and meet, you know, mix with the local people. And we did that. So it was great. And I could see some of the people, you know, that these guys paint in the novel. But yeah, we were there when, well, this novel influenced so many people. It influenced John F. Kennedy, who I believe was a senator at the time it came out, when he became president, to create the Peace Corps.
Ah, really?
Which was a whole different approach to American diplomacy.
Yeah, that's a huge impact.
Yeah.
For a book. All right, The Ugly American. That's first on Elaine Thatcher's list. Well, let's bring in next David Everett from Back of Beyond Books in Moab. David, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are things going at Back of Beyond? Good business?
Oh, they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, things are, we're starting to see the beginning of our fall season pick up. Yeah. Been a little bit of a sweaty summer, as it tends to be down here in the desert, but overall, no complaints.
We need to get it. Okay, Lynn needs to get her headphones on here, or the volume.
Say something, David.
Hello.
Oh,
anybody?
Good. Okay, I gotcha.
All right. Good. Okay. All right. Very, very good. Well, that's great, David. By the way, we haven't put up promotional announcements, but I'll announce it right here. I'll be in Moab on August 30th.
So my birthday.
On your birthday, on Elaine's birthday.
You aren't going to be at my party?
I'm not going to be at your party. Unless you move it to Moab. So I'll be doing a couple of broadcasts at the USU Moab campus. We'll be doing a live broadcast of Behind the Headlines that morning at 9 o'clock, then 10 o'clock, a special Access Utah featuring artists from the performing at the Moab Music Festival. And then we'll do a meet and greet there following those broadcasts at 11
a.m. That'll be great.
So that's all at the USU Moab Center. So hope people come on down. In the meantime, David, I'm sure you got some recommendations for our listeners. What's first on your list?
I sure do. I've got three or four I'd love to chat about. First is one that is currently on, I believe, the New York Times top 10 bestseller list. It's a book called A Walk in the Park by Kevin Fedarko, who had written another bestseller back in the day called The Emerald Mile, and this is sort of a follow-up to that, and it is the true story of a, as he says, a spectacular misadventure in the Grand Canyon. He and a good friend of his, a professional photographer, they decide that they are going to thru-hike the Grand Canyon, which is not something that people typically do. Typically they boat it, but they, if they're going to, you know, go all the way through it. But he follows the path of a few other intrepid hikers, and the story is one of, at times, sort of cringy, painful, indeed missteps in terms of what it's like to be out in the desert hiking for days on end, and other times pretty transcendent stories of adventure and encounters and beautiful moments of being out in the desert. And he writes it as only Kevin can, in a way that's self-deprecating and humorous, and also sort of it really talks about the canyon in a way that comes across very genuine, and is a really great way to read about how people can be in the canyon. And in a really nice set of stories around the history, the human history of who's lived in the canyon over the years, and his conversations with Native Americans who live there and have lived there are really the highlight of the book.
Yeah, that's a great book. I had a chance to interview Kevin Fedarko on that book, so I've read some of it.
Oh, fantastic! So not new to you guys, which is great.
No, it's thank you for that recommendation. It is a wonderful book, and I just want to highlight there are parts that laugh out loud funny.
Definitely
Kevin Fedarko can be very funny. There's a scene early in the book where he and his buddies show up. They're going to go out on an initial hike with these very experienced hikers, and they are not prepared. Kevin and his buddy are not prepared, and it's the reaction of these experienced hikers to Kevin. So there's some funny parts, poignant parts. A Walk in the Park, right? The name of the book.
Yes, Walk in the Park by Fedarko. And he will actually be down in Moab for Utah Humanities weekend here in October. So we're really excited to host him here for a couple of days.
Yeah, that's great. Wonderful. Yeah.
So tying into that theme of the West and nonfiction, one that we are really excited about, if I may continue, is the second book by Zach Podmore called Life After Deadpool. Have you interviewed him yet?
I interviewed him recently, but the book wasn't out yet, so I'll have to bring him back on. Life After Deadpool.
Yeah, great. Well, I won't spend too much time on it other than to really say that this is a story of his interviews and encounters with all sorts of different humans in his time on Lake Powell, really exploring the past and the future of that reservoir down there. And for those of you who are not familiar, this is not a tie-in to the recent Deadpool movie, just for the record.
right.
I can imagine there might be some confusion there, but we're also super happy to say that Zach is going to be down here at Star Hall tomorrow talking about his book. I think one of his first sort of readings, presentations ahead of the publication of the book, but we are going to have some advanced copies available for people there. So we're really excited about him coming in. You know, Zach's a longtime resident of Southeast Utah. Actually, got to work with him when he was a reporter down out of Bluff when I was working down in San Juan County with the county there. So I've always enjoyed his professionalism and approach, and really thought his perspective on what the future of Lake Powell could be and Glen Canyon Dam moving forward was pretty visionary.
Life after Deadpool.
Cool.
Okay.
That's correct.
Look forward to that one.
Yeah, and then maybe I'll just skip right to my curveball book for you, which is a work of fiction by a woman named Muriel Leung. It's L-E-U-N-G. It's her debut novel, and it's called How to Fall in Love in a Time of Unnameable Disaster. And I like to occasionally keep in touch with the sort of apocalyptic genre, and this fits right in it. It is a story of New York City enduring periodic acid rainstorms. They come every Tuesday, and they're there for a couple of hours. And so what people are living in New York and surviving through this in this sort of slow motion apocalypse that's happening as the buildings really degrade and people are, you know, dying from being in contact with acid rain, and how they cope with that is a thread of this story, but it's also this very magical, almost dream state-like way of telling the story. There are ghosts, many ghosts involved. There are people who don't have heads but are falling in love with people who do. Actually, the most probably memorable or empathetic character in the entire story is a cockroach ghost who keeps people company throughout their lonely times in their apartments on the Upper East Side. And it really is a story of love and loss and coping with disaster. And obviously there's, you know, metaphors in there with or allegories around maybe the time of COVID, but also just with pending climate change, impacts of climate change and community and how frail it can be. And it's really a wonderfully crafted, like I said, dreamlike state of a story that reads fairly quickly and at first is a little bit confusing, but if you stick with it, it really comes through for you. I really enjoyed this book, and I believe it doesn't come out until October of this month.
Tell us the title again.
How to Fall in Love in a Time of Unnameable Disaster.
Unnameable Disaster.
Yeah.
So, and that Leung is her name?
Correct. Muriel Leung.
So, is it a dark book or is it a more optimistic book?
I would say it walks the line between those two, but probably falls over toward more of the side of darkness. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not The Road per se.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely think I'd say it probably falls way more on the sort of more morose and less hopeful side of things. However, that said, there is a love story that threads through it that keeps you going with it.
Yeah,
sounds interesting.
Got to have a love story. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's great. What else do you? We have plenty of time here, David. So any others you have?
Oh, let's see. Well, I did recently read, and I imagine you probably interviewed her as well. I did recently read Betsy Gaines Quammen's latest publication, True West.
True West. Yeah, that's an excellent book. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. It's about, as you probably know, it's about the subheading is Myth and Mending on the Far Side of America. She spends a season, particularly toward the end of COVID, interviewing and having conversations with people throughout the West, particularly in Montana where she's living, and really just tries to have conversations with people who maybe aren't all on the same political spectrum and really just try to understand what their perspective is and why they believe the way they believe. She spent some time, at a sort of a creationist museum, which is super fascinating for those who maybe are less familiar with that perspective, and really just comes away with this, I'd say, conclusion that the only hope for us is conversation with those who we don't necessarily always agree with. And I very much appreciated that perspective as well, and enjoyed this book. And so those are really the main ones that I was planning to talk about at this point. That's what I got.
Okay. All right. Great. Before we let you go, David, I'm going to be talking about some of my all-time favorites. So they're, maybe books that had a big influence on you, Reaching Back. Anything that jumps to mind that, a favorite all-timer of yours?
Oh, sure. I can definitely talk about a few. One that comes to mind for me was, he recently wrote another book called The Sun House, which I read recently, but David James Duncan's The River Why was really a formative, influential work for me in terms of adventure and being out west. And he published that in 1983, if you can believe that. And it really is about the journey of self-discovery that, people find themselves on and not infrequently out in the west. So I really loved that book, thought it was a super important one. The other one, who's a Western author that I think I read him maybe 10 years ago or so, but could not put down, was The Dog Stars by Peter Heller. Familiar with him?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the book that I probably recommend more to people than any other work of fiction in the store, just because, other than obviously Edward Abbey, just because I think it's such a powerful story about, again, it's a little bit apocalyptic, but about redemption and hope. That one is much more hopeful. It takes place in Denver and also then over in Grand Junction, so close to us over here in Moab. And the story of connection and loneliness and fighting for survival, the way he weaves those together is unique, and I absolutely love that book.
All right. Well, thanks for those suggestions. By the way, I guess, the geography plays a part, I would imagine. Anywhere in the West, people would walk into a bookstore, probably want Edward Abbey, but especially in Moab, I'm guessing.
That's absolutely right. As you probably know, the Back of Beyond Books was formed sort of as an homage to Edward Abbey after he died in 1989. A bunch of his friends got together and the best way to honor that author was to open up a bookstore in the West about the West and the Colorado Plateau. And so, yeah, much of our sort of theme and approach here centers around the natural and human history in the West, and particularly on the Colorado Plateau. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, David Everett from Back of Beyond Books in Moab, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll take a break, Elaine. We'll go to, through the rest of your list. We'll get some of my all-timers. I really hope that you'll email or call as well. Love to get your list here. And we'll put it in our UPR community book list. So a couple of ways you can get to us. UPRAccess@gmail.com. UPRAccess@gmail.com. It's UPRAccess@gmail.com. Or you can call me to 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495 with your favorite book or list of books or something you're looking forward to. Love to get your list. We'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're compiling another UPR community book list, and we want to know what you're reading. This could be a book you're looking forward to, a book you're reading right now, the next one on your list, or maybe an all-timer. Reach back to your childhood, a favorite children's book or children's book you're reading to your children right now, or a book that's had a big influence on you that's been a few years. Maybe a book that you'd like to reread. anything in any of those categories, we'd love to hear from you with your list. And we're getting Elaine Thatcher's list. We got David Everett's list. Well, I'll be recommending a few books here as well. And we're going to put these all on our website. That'll be up in a couple of hours here, upr.org. So the way to get your list to me is upraccess@gmail.com. Just use that email link, upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Could be one book, could be many.
Or call and talk to us.
And here's how you do that, 800-826-1495. 800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. Elaine was making fun of me off the air that I was looking at the sign with the number. And you have a point. I should have that memorized. I do have it memorized.
Every time he said the phone number, he would look up at the sign. And
that's
I thought,
right.
you know, you've been here how many years and you've given out that number so many times?
That's right. It's you're not absolutely sure, right? We've had a couple of folks here during a member drive give out their home number. I guess that's maybe what I was worried about.
But, yeah.
800-826-1495 is the way to call us. We'd love to get your list. Elaine, let me give the first on my list. This is mostly all-timers, but I did think of one that I just did the interview this week. And I'll just recommend this because I think this topic is needed so much. Boy, I've forgotten it. This was Monday, and I've already forgotten the name of the book. Oh, it's called Proclaim Peace. This is Patrick Mason and David Pulsiver. This is marketed to a Latter-day Saint audience, but as the authors say, that they want this to be broader than that, and they've written it to be broader than that. And this is the beginning, Elaine, of a series that I'm going to be doing on peace building.
Ooh, nice.
So needed in today's world, highlighted by this presidential year that's driving all of us crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's problem's going to be with us next year as well, right? And the year
I'm
after
sure
that.
I'm sure it will be, yeah.
So I kicked off that peace building series with Patrick Mason and David Pulsiver with their wonderful book, Proclaim Peace.
I'll
and
have
so
to
I'm,
look
I'm
for it.
Recommending that to people. Check that out and really any book that promotes peace building, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the rest of these on my list will be kind of all-timers. First on my list of influential authors is Jane Austen. It might seem cliched, but Jane Austen's had a huge impact on me. I mean, she's so good.
Yep.
So good.
And you have to read it and not watch. I mean, the movies are great.
Yeah.
I love them. But reading...
Read the book. Read the books.
Reading her subtle humor.
Yes.
And, yeah. Yeah.
So Pride and Prejudice is the place to start.
Mm-hmm.
It's not her first book, but it's a fast read. It's a fun read.
Yep.
You know, you could read it on a level of, will Darcy and Elizabeth get together? I don't want to ruin anything. But it's her sharp-eyed observations of society.
Very sharp, yep.
And laugh-out-loud funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's very funny.
I would say there are other authors that they're the same, you know, Dickens.
Yeah.
Read him I love the movies and the TV shows based on his books, but reading him and getting his little jabs, you know, his social criticism comes out so much more strongly in the books than in the movies, because the movies focus on just the plot.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness, his wonderful humor and description of the times,
yeah.
You know.
What's your favorite Dickens book?
Blair House.
Blair House, okay.
Of all of the, you would be, maybe that would be surprising, but it's a big, thick book, and it can be a difficult read, but, oh, my gosh, it's such a great.
Yeah.
It's a great commentary on the legal system of Britain at the time and how a one particular case, it has to do with, you know, claiming money that the plaintiffs say is theirs, and the lawyers just bleed all the money out of the case, and after years and years of litigation, there's no money left to inherit. So
Blair House. Okay. Blair House, yeah. All right. By Dickens. I'll just add along with, you know, read anything of Austin with the possible exception of Mansfield Park.
I haven't read that one.
I have a hard time getting through that, but I know people for whom that's their favorite Austin book.
Yeah.
You know, Emma is great. But I for myself, I need to add Persuasion, which is her last book, last completed book. There's an elegiac tone to it, but although there's some funny parts. Some of the Austin themes have reached a kind of a apogee in that book. Her hypochondriacs.
Yes.
the sister who, woe is me, unless there's something she wants to participate in, that she's
right.
up and
then
off
she's
her feet.
Gone. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the fathers. The fathers get worse and worse throughout Austin. And by the time we get to Persuasion, Sir Walter is just, he's a narcissist. He judges everyone by how they look. And he's shallow, you know.
Whereas if you look at Pride and Prejudice, the father is the steadying influence for Elizabeth. You know, he's kind of resigned to his wife's silliness and his house full of women and so forth. But
although if you pay attention, it's the mother who's really, really looking after her daughter's interests. Right?
Well, yes,
and doing it a silly way
in the context of the times. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So I'll just throw that Pride and Prejudice and Persuasion. Anything by Jane Austen. What's next on your list?
Well, another favorite that I read this time, and I can't remember if I heard about it on this show. I don't think I did. I've got two or three on this list. This time that I heard about last time we met, but this one is called The Forgetting Room by Nick Bantock, and it's a really short, easy read. It's a novel with illustrations. Nick Bantock is an artist, and the plot has to do with a man coming to Spain from America to clear out his grandfather's house. His grandfather has passed away. And finding clues, you know, basically the grandfather thinks that the young man needs to have more, he needs to be more creative and not so regimented in his life. I think that's basically how you might put it. But anyway, it's got these great illustrations in it. The first one is like a cipher. It's a fold out piece that you look at, and then the clues throughout the rest of the novel are found in that piece. And then there are illustrations throughout the novel as well. So I just loved that book so much. Maybe because I, you know, have interest in creativity and finding my own inner muse and all of those things. And that's kind of how I felt reading this book. I thought it was just lovely.
Tell me again.
The Forgetting Room by Nick Bantock.
Forgetting Room by Nick Bantock. That sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have a recommendation from our very own producer here, Haley Vilsack. Thanks, Haley. Haley, she says, A Little Life, A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara is she says it's a heart-wrenching novel that follows four friends from college to adulthood, delving deep into themes of trauma, friendship, love, and resilience. So thanks
that
for that.
Sounds good.
A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. So appreciate that recommendation a lot. I'll go next to the next one on my list. Any list of my all-timers is going to include P.G. Woodhouse.
Uh-huh.
You might notice a theme, light and funny, right? Because I don't
escape.
I guess that's what I'm going for, escape. P.G. Woodhouse is a master. If you want farce, if you want to laugh out loud and just smile. By the way, Elaine, I heard that Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of England, this kind of validated me, if I need validation. Apparently, he would go home after a hard day of prime ministering, and he'd read P.G. Woodhouse. That's what he would read.
Well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, Woodhouse, you have got me now on the road. I was looking for my copy of the collected works of P.G. Woodhouse
the
other day, and I couldn't find them because I have not seriously read any of that. So that's next on my list.
All right. Yeah. So I'll recommend this is what you see, you know, Woodhouse lovers and experts. If you ask them, well, what's one book? Right. And often they will recommend, and I recommend this as well, Joy in the Morning is the name of the novel, Joy in the Morning. Just about anything you pick up, P.G. Woodhouse is good, mm-hmm. right? Joy in the Morning is especially good. It's a Jeeves and Wooster story, so you get right in the middle of his most famous characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's a novel, and it's, you know, shenanigans and overbearing aunts and... feather-brained Bertie Wooster, and then very wise and smart servant Jeeves, who bails him out. I think this one might have the faux dictator. There's a kind of a Hitler figure that P.G. Woodhouse makes fun of in these books. So Joy in the Morning. I also want to add Something New, which is a wonderful book. It's kind of a prequel to the Blanding's Castle novels. But really anything... I would read the Molinar stories. You got the golf stories. It's but Joy in the Morning and Something New. Some places to start with P.G. Woodhouse.
Great.
So what's next on your list?
Well, I think I mentioned last time, I'm not a huge mystery fan, but I keep hearing about certain authors, you know, and the one I decided to read this time was Sue Grafton. She's done the ABC or Alphabet Murders, you know.
Right.
So I read A is for Alibi. I would say it was okay, you know. I mean, it was interesting, but I probably would not read the whole series. However, I have to say that I was interested in the main character, whose name I don't remember right now. She's the detective. Kate, I think. Anyway, so... I was interested enough in that character that I might read another. But these long series of mysteries kind of, I feel like they get quite formulaic, so we'll see. But contrasting that with a couple of books that I recommended last time we were here, the two books by Libby Siporin, or Ona Siporin, who is one of our local authors, Her two books, her two mystery books, Bitter Maremma and If Two of Them Are Dead, they have much more to do with character, and I really enjoy that more. I was talking to Ona not too long ago, and she said, yeah, she really enjoys developing characters, and so she's not sure, she doesn't know if she'll continue with more mysteries or delve into more character-driven writing.
But
the formulas get tiresome after a while. So I enjoyed the book A is for Alibi by Sue Grafton. I have to say I did enjoy it, but I probably would not read the whole series based on that.
Yeah. But anyway, the first one was enjoyed. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Let's see. I'll go next to, and this is again my all-timers, or some of my all-timers. Barbara Tuchman has had such a huge influence on me. She is not a professional, well, I think she's dead, was not a professional historian, what they call a popular historian, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so sharp, her research was so good, and you know, if you're a historian, I want you to be a good writer, right?
Yep.
I want you to have a point of view. Barbara Tuchman. The Guns of August, I think, is her most famous book. But the one I most enjoy, and I go back and read this every once in a while, it's called The Proud Tower. And it's life in the 1890s and early 1900s. It's that period before everything changed, World War I.
Mm-hmm.
World War I rocked the world, mm-hmm. made people much more cynical, really created our modern age. So what was life like just before that cataclysmic event? And Barbara Tuchman just does that so well. It's called The Proud Tower. So,
you know, you talk about all-time favorite books, and when I think back, the ones that really I have loved the most are all nonfiction.
Yeah.
I've always considered myself more of a fiction reader, but as I've aged, I really am getting more into nonfiction. And, I, you know, some of the most thoughtful and life-changing books that I've read are nonfiction. Community and the Politics of Place by Daniel Kemmes. He's a fellow in the, well, he was, he's probably retired now, but up in Montana. And it's about local politics and how you solve problems together. And he's written several other books that I enjoy, but Community and the Politics of Place was a great introduction to his thought for me. Daniel Kemmes.
Daniel Kemmes, yeah.
K-E-M-M-I-S. And another one that really changed me was, gosh, what's it called? I'll come up with it in a minute. It was one, I'll come up with it in a minute. It was written back in the 80s.
Okay, yeah. You know, one that just popped into mind, and I was wondering, well, can I in good conscience recommend this from my perspective? I'll just go ahead and recommend it. Because I've only read a part of one book. But I hear this praised so much, and I can tell you it's so wonderful. Robert Caro's incredible ongoing biography of Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Oh, okay.
And I can't remember which one. I think it's Passage of Power. It's the book about Lyndon Johnson's time as Senate Majority Leader. And so Caro goes into a whole history of the Senate to set this up. There's a reason he's 88, and we're hoping he can finish live long enough, Mr. Caro, to finish this. But then the first book he goes into before he even gets to LBJ, he describes the culture and geography of the Texas Hill Country where LBJ was formed. So I've only read bits and pieces, but I'll go ahead and recommend that, the whole LBJ series from Robert Caro.
Okay, I found my book.
Okay.
I found my book. It's called Risk and Culture, the subtitle is An Essay on the Selection of Technological and Environmental Dangers. I read this back mid-80s by Mary Douglas and Aaron Wildowski, Risk and Culture, and fascinating look at how we choose the things to be worried about.
And interesting.
And it goes into, you know, what people on the left are worried about and what people on the right are worried about. And it goes into the development of nonprofit and volunteer organizations and how they become more corporate. I mean, it's a wide-ranging study that absolutely was one of the most insightful books I've ever read. Risk and Culture by
Risk and Culture
by Douglas and Wildowski.
Okay.
Great. I'll give that to Haley so she can put it on the list.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, let's take another break. We'll come back with a final segment on our UPR book list episode, and we'd love to get your book. You can get us at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. That's upraccess@gmail.com, or 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. More following this. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We are telling about our favorite books. And we do have some book lists that have come in right now, Elaine. So we have just about 5-6 minutes left. Let's get these in. Let's see. Jolynn Lyon says, hello, Tom. I discovered Richard Osman's Thursday Murder Club series this year and absolutely love it. It's about a group of English retirement home residents who solve murders. The books are entertaining but also have lots of human insight. I'm also intrigued by the bits of mystery that remain unsolved or solved wrong in the novels. That's kind of interesting.
Oh.
I would stick with the series anyway, but I keep reading to find out how the unsolved plot lines might resurface. So that's Richard Osman, Thursday Murder Club. Thanks, Jolynn. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
We'll put that on our list. And then we got this from Laura Huffman, who says, the book I'm currently reading and love is Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. The authors are Peter C. Brown, Henry L. Roediger III, and Mark A. McDaniel. So Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. She says, I initially bought this book hoping it could improve my memory, which seemed to be declining. The book describes the science of learning and how to use that understanding to learn and remember new information and develop new skills. It works. I learned that the most efficacious learning feels unproductive while you're in the process. It enabled me to stop feeling stupid when I was trying to learn new things and to retain more. This is a great book for teachers and lifelong learners. So Laura recommends Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. That sounds great.
I could have used that as I was trying to learn this computer program to as a grant writer.
Yeah. Yeah. So but now you can pick it up and maybe it'll help you in the future.
I'll do that. Yeah.
Very good. What's next on your list?
This is one that was recommended at our last show, and it's called Ban This Book by Alan Gratz. It's a youth book, and it's really quite delightful about a young girl who whose school takes some books off the shelves, including her most favorite book ever, which I can't say because it has such a long title, but all the books that are mentioned within this book are real books that kids like, you know. And it's about, and so she's very upset because it was a parent of one of the other children who complained about certain books and they were removed from the shelves of her school library. So what she does is she, with a couple of friends, creates a locker library. She starts putting all the banned books in her locker and letting other students know they can borrow them from her. And ultimately, you can imagine she gets in trouble. But it's lovely. It's a cute story, and it has a point to make about one person's book to be banned is another person's book that changes their life. You know.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. So, tell me again the title.
It's called Ban This Book by Alan Gratz.
Yeah, Ban This Book. That sounds very interesting. Let me just recommend another author that has written several biographies. I just discovered him, just a few years ago. I love biographies.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to read about lives, and then you can take lessons for your own life. Gene Edward Smith is a wonderful historian. Teaches in the academy, but is a wonderful writer as well. He's written biographies of Eisenhower and Ulysses Grant. And the one I'll recommend here on the list is his biography of FDR.
Ah.
And for a while, I couldn't find a good full bio of FDR. Such an interesting life, right?
Yeah, really interesting.
So now there are a few, and my favorite of those is Gene Edward Smith, such a great writer.
And what's the title of it?
FDR, just called FDR.
Yeah. Okay.
What's next on your list?
Well, I think I mentioned these last time, but I was still reading one of them, and they were fun books, especially if you work in academia. Dear Committee Members is the first one, and the second one is The Shakespeare Requirement, and they're both by Julie Schumacher. And really funny. Dear Committee Members is made up of letters written by a disgruntled faculty member. You know, some of them are recommendation letters for students, some of them are complaints to the dean, some of them are, you know, to the department head saying, you know, how come I still can, you know, have fumes or something coming into my office. Anyway, and then The Shakespeare Requirement is the second book, and it is where our hero has become the department head. And this is an English department, and he has become the department head, and he is struggling with all the politics. You know, the saying goes that the reason university or academic politics are so nasty is because the stakes are so small.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And that's kind of the way this is, and it's all about how he can't get his department budget released to him until the department all agrees on a vision statement. And it's, I mean, if you've worked in that kind of an atmosphere, you'll know how frustrating and how funny that can get. They're both funny books.
Tell me again the title.
The first one is Dear Committee Members, and the second is The Shakespeare Requirement.
Okay.
By Julie Schumacher.
All right, very good. I'll just mention one more. Books that had a big influence on me. I was a teenager when Roots by Alex Haley came out.
Oh, yeah.
And so I picked that up. It was one of the first longer form books that I had read. Just blown away by it.
Mm-hmm.
It was even before the miniseries that came out. Alex Haley, started looking into his ancestry. And this came to Utah to do research. And then this was the result. Just this groundbreaking novel about his ancestors who were came over as slaves and then went through American history.
And so many strides have been made since then in African American genealogy, it was very difficult to trace in many cases because of changes of names, splitting up families. And there's a lot more that they can do now to trace African American families.
Yeah. Well, Lane, we're at the end of our time. So I'm sure you've got some more stuff on some more books on your list. We'll have you. I guess you've given that to Haley or Will, and we'll put that up on our website.
I'll just mention, talking about African-American genealogy, there's a project called A Century of Black Mormons that is documenting those enslaved people who were brought to Utah, and then some of them moved on, and it's an interesting project.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Elaine.
Thank
Appreciate
you very
it always.
Much.
And thanks, everybody, for sharing your books, and we'll have that up on upr.org shortly. Thanks for listening to Access Utah.
UPR is a statewide member-supported service of Utah State University and the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. KUSU-FM Logan, KCEU Price, KUST Moab, KUSL Richfield, KUSK Vernal, KUSR Logan. Also heard at upr.org or on the UPR app.